Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome to Christian Worldview this morning with Dr. John Coben. Beautiful day in Greenville, currently 56 degrees outside. Going to get up to a high of 83 degrees today and under sunny skies. Just a beautiful spring day once again in Greenville, South Carolina. A lot of interesting things happening as usual on Christian Worldview today. Look forward to hearing your questions and comments. You can send them by email to me at questions@policyofliberty.net. You can also give us a call at 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. Look forward to talking with you about different things. We've been talking in recent days about abortion and when you can actually intercede and intervene on behalf of the person to be aborted, the human being who's about to be killed. Interestingly enough, many people are not comfortable with the idea of resisting evil doers such as abortion doctors or others who would perpetrate the crimes of murder. By intervening with force. Why? Because it's illegal to do so. It's because abortion is legal. The murder of unborn children or about to be born children is legal. It becomes illegal to stop the perpetrator. Whereas if in any other circumstances, it would be legal to do so, to intervene on someone else's behalf. So we've been talking about that on recent shows. You may have a question or comment about that. Chuck Baldwin gave a surprisingly weak response to this. Didn't really have any thoughts about it beforehand, before I discussed it with him on the air, apparently, and didn't seem to appreciate the logical consistency between those two things. So if you'd like to talk about what Chuck had to say, basically was that if it's illegal, we can't do it. We'd like to hear from your point of view here on the air today. It just doesn't make sense to me, obviously, logically, that if I could intervene and save Chuck Baldwin's wife on the street when she's being raped or assaulted, why I couldn't save the life of another person, such as an unborn child. It seemed to me the same logic were there as long as I were the eyewitness to the crime and I was the only one who could intervene. In a civil society, we choose not to become vigilantes and intervene at all times, but only in that particular case where there is no time to get law enforcement there to do the job for us in protecting the life. And instead, we're the only people on the spot who possibly can. We don't have a legal obligation to intervene, but we can or we may intervene, and we should do so most of the time as Christians because of love to our neighbor. Well, at any rate, the biggest hang-up Christians have nowadays, it seems, is that they like to be upholding what God's truths are in the world and the principles of God's words, but they like to do it only when it is legal to do so. When it's illegal to do it, all of a sudden it becomes a little more difficult and the excuses start rising up of why they're not going to obey God rather than men at this particular point. Mainly they're afraid of men, they're afraid of going to jail, they're afraid of many things that could be a problem for them, and that's exactly what they run up against here in the world in which we live. That attitude, unfortunately, has led to the diminution of rights and the debasement of the gospel and debasement of the quality of preaching that we see in the world, but it's also created or led to a lot of public policy, which is nefarious, off the wall, wrong-headed, and harmful to those of us who hold dear the truths of the faith. Well, a couple quick announcements, and we're going to get back to a couple of interesting things that have been sent to us, or articles for today. Just starting you off with some food for thought on yesterday's program, in case somebody still wants to talk about that. Confederate Memorial Day, come and honor those who wore the gray, Saturday, April 30th, 2 p.m. in Clinton Square in Clinton, South Carolina. Sponsored by the Lawrence Briars, South Carolina, or Sons of Confederate Veterans Camp. For information or details, call James DeShields after 6 p.m. Monday through Friday at 864-969-5029. That's 864-969-5029. 5029. I also want to recommend to you the Nationalist Times. It's a politically incorrect monthly newspaper that has reported on the progress of the Christian Worldview program since it began. TRN listeners can obtain a free postpaid sample copy by calling Nelson at 864-642-4315. Visit the Times website, anu.org. Mention this ad for a big discount on your subscription. The Nationalist Times picks up where the liberal media leave off and salutes Dr. Coben's pioneering broadcast work. And we appreciate other things that are supporting us here at the Tyranny Response Network. We do need your support, by the way. We are listener-supported. We have essentially no commercials on the air during the day. It's just good quality broadcasting. Why not support this volunteer effort? Go to the homepage, policyofliberty.net, and send off an email to the appropriate links there where it says how you can get involved or how you can support Christian Worldview and the Tyranny Response Network. It's a great ministry and an opportunity for you or your church to be involved with, and we would encourage you to do so. Those of us who are working so diligently as volunteers are very happy to do so and appreciative of people's comments and accolades and all those things that we frequently receive when we go out into the public world, not behind the microphone here, and talk to folks. However, we do have ongoing expenses, folks. We're trying to upgrade our signal quality and do other things that will continue to improve our broadcast, and that all requires money. So if you're able to help us out in any way, we would really appreciate it. And please don't put it off and say another guy is going to do it, because the other guy is you. It's not going to happen if everybody puts it off to the other guy. On the other hand, if everybody contributes just a small amount towards the Christian Worldview broadcast specifically and to the TRN network, the Tyranny Response Network in general, it goes a long way. So please do prayerfully and generously help us out here at the Tyranny Response Network. And I don't often talk about getting support and money for the program here, but folks, we just really need to have support. If we don't have people paying for advertising and so forth, there's no other way to do it. Well, we have an article that came in on Roosevelt's phony rights from the research staff this morning. This is an article by Tiber Machen, as a philosopher, libertarian philosopher, definitely not a believer, as far as I know, not my conversations with him. He says, April 12th was the anniversary of FDR's inglorious death from ailments largely hidden from the public pattern of deception that has now become too closely associated with America's political leadership. But that's nothing compared to the deception perpetuated upon the American people via Roosevelt's list of phony rights, a list that has forever corrupted the ideas of the American founders. Roosevelt unhesitantingly referred to his list as a second Bill of Rights under which a new basis of security and prosperity could be established for all, regardless of station, race, or creed. Here was part of the list. Here is what part of the list that simply cannot be upheld is true as a list of rights that makes good sense. One, the right to the right to a useful and remunerative job in industries or shops or farms or mines in the nation. Well, as Machen says, if we do have such a right, then others must be forced to employ us, thus subjecting them all to involuntary servitude. Good point. Roosevelt's second right, the right to earn enough to provide adequate food and clothing and recreation. What in the world does that mean? How can you have the right to provide adequate food, clothing, and recreation? Who decides what is adequate? And who, again, has to provide those rights? Sounds like someone else has to be brought into slavery again to pay for it. Here's a third one. The right of every farmer to raise and sell his products at a return, which will give him and his family a decent living. A decent living? Who decides what a decent living is? And if a farmer is given that right, then who's forced to buy them? Apparently the government is by his products, his produce. Well, apparently government is going to have to subsidize that at the expense of the taxpayer. The right of every businessman, large and small, to trade in an atmosphere of freedom from unfair competition and dominion by monopolies at home or abroad. So every businessman also has this special right under FDR. By claiming a right to unfair competition, FDR insisted on a cadre of market supervisors, a squad of police state officers, empowered to decide for the people in the market what is or what is not fair, which is simply an impossible task, and gives those police state officials or officers vast arbitrary powers over other people. So true. FDR also said that another part of his second Bill of Rights is the right of every family to a decent home. So what is a decent home again? And who's going to end up paying for decent homes? So as Machen says, okay, so this is decent. So this decent home, if it's everyone's right, will have to be secured on the backs of other people who have other projects they choose to pursue instead of providing decent homes for the rest of us. Free men and women ought never to be made to produce goods and services for other people, not if it's not what they choose to do. This is their own task, however difficult it may be. Another part of the Bill of Rights says, or his Bill of Rights, the right of adequate medical care and the opportunity to achieve and enjoy good health. Sounds like more slavery, as people who are forced to pay for other people's medical care. The right to adequate protection, another plank in his little Bill of Rights, from the economic fears of old age, sickness, accident, and unemployment. This, too, as Machen says, is something all of us ought to provide for ourselves, not extract at the point of the gun from others. Our right to liberty is, in part, to be respected and protected, so we don't have that kind of intrusion. The right to good education is another plank. Yes, Virginia, he says, public education itself is a forcible transfer program of resources and services unbecoming of free men and political free men and women. The plain truth, Machen says, is that all these phony rights of FDR, that's Franklin Delano Roosevelt and his supporters, many of them going very strong today in law schools and political philosophy departments across the country, indeed all over the world via the United Nations adoption of the list, have helped to systematically abrogate our genuine bona fide and alienable rights, that there are the conditions of our freedom and of a free society. No, Roosevelt's phony rights must be given up for what they are. A nightmare of political privileges, which make it okay for government to grow into the Leviathan it now is. Well, we do appreciate Machen's comments here. Even though he's an atheist, he has some insights that we can learn from who love liberty and who are Christians, and he is right on the money. Franklin Roosevelt should not be remembered as anything but a scoundrel and one who opposed the vision of the Founding Fathers. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Government is not reason. It is not eloquence. Government is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. President George Washington.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
You know, there's so much talk this morning going on about the Pope Benedict, what is it, the 16th or whatever it is, from this first German leader of the Roman Catholic institution. It's really amazing to me how so much time is devoted to this and how many people are so interested in who the next pope will be. I even had a libertarian who professes to be a Christian so excited about it that she emailed everyone on her list to tell them the good news, or the news that the Pope had been elected and blah, blah, blah. I didn't faze me a bit. Don't care personally about who the Pope is. He's, as far as I'm concerned, just an evildoer, one who promotes a false gospel in the world and leads many people, tragically, to hell with him because of his false doctrine. He doesn't have the gospel of Jesus Christ. He has a gospel that's man-made, work-centered, and is of no interest to anyone. It should be of no interest to anyone who is a believer. Well, and I'm not even sure why people who would appreciate a libertarian or a classically liberal paleoconservative or just a freedom-minded person would be uninterested in these posts, because they are not only autocratic, they tend to be very much in favor of socialism, and in the past have not been those who help promote the ideals of our founding fathers in the world. But for whatever reason, many people really are very interested in what's going on with the world of the papacy, at the Catholic, so-called Catholic Church. At any rate, in other news of related to this, I thought it was kind of quite ironic that the whole hoax of the Catholic religion and all of the hocus-pocus and foolishness was developed in other stories that came up over the airwaves yesterday. Fox News, for instance, reported that some see the Virgin Mary in underpass stain. At Tuesday, April 19th, 2005, the Associated Press reports in Chicago, a steady stream of the faithful and the curious, many carrying flowers and candles, have flocked to an expressway underpass for a view of a yellow and white stain on a concrete wall that some believe is an image of the Virgin Mary. "We believe it's a miracle," said Olivia Tello, 42, of Chicago. "We have faith, and we can see her face." Police patrolled the emergency turnoff area under the Kennedy Expressway since Monday, as hundreds of people have walked down to see the image and the growing memorial of flowers and cradles that are candles that surround it. Besides the image is an artist rendering of the Virgin Mary embracing Pope John Paul II in a pose some see echoed in the stain. Tuesday morning, women knelt with rosary beads behind a police barricade, while men in work shirts stood solemnly before the image praying. A police officer kept the crowd of about three dozen from getting too close to the traffic, but didn't stop them from gathering around the stain. The Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Chicago had not received any request to authenticate the law images as of Monday. Authenticate, spokesman Jim Dwyer said. Anyway, this kind of hocus-pocus stuff is just unbelievable to those of us who profess faith in the true and living God. And it's just bizarre that so many people will just flock to see the so-called image of the Virgin Mary that occurred just from a stain under an underpass. Something leaked through and just stained in a certain way, and they can sort of make out the Virgin Mary's image in it. Bizarre to me. These are people who vote in America, folks. These are people who support Bill Clinton or George W. Bush. These are the kinds of people that we have to reach, not only with the gospel, but with the a correct understanding of policy and a correct understanding of the vision of the founding fathers. But yet, how sad and how tragic that they are so involved with papal elections or black or white smoke coming out of a chimney and stains that appear upon subway or expressway underpasses. This is the kind of quality people we're dealing with. This is what the public school produces. This is what the Catholic Church produces. We have many enemies in the world, folks. If we intend to be a free society, if we intend to maintain our heritage, we need to call these things for what they are: evil, superstitious, and foolish. And we need to move on from there. There's no other way to deal with it. And you've got to be willing to say the hard things to people who are Catholics in our communities. Not too many people are Catholics here in the upstate of Greenville, or upstate of South Carolina, the upcountry here, Greenville area. There are some good-sized Catholic churches, and quite often they're just treated as just other denominations. They're not just another denomination. They're a denomination, or not a denomination, they are a organization based on a false gospel, where people, unfortunately, will end up in hell because they haven't believed in the true and living God. And they have not believed in their salvation being attained by grace through faith in Christ alone. What a tragedy it is. And yet Christians are just so afraid of offending other people that they just won't say anything to their neighbors and confront them about the issue so often. Well, it's a sad commentary on Southern culture, but that indeed is the way things are around here. Well, We have a couple of other very interesting things to talk about, but I see we're already come up against another break. So when we come back from this break, we'll go ahead and take care of these different announcements and emails and stuff that have come through. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Be back in just a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Will Rogers said, "Those who complain about the high cost of government should be glad we're not getting all the government we're paying for."
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain speaking. We want to thank you for flying TRN Airways. Now, if you'll just look out of your left side window, you can see the dense clouds of liberal lunacy commonly polluting the airwaves. On the right side, you can see clear skies full of common sense, liberty-minded conversation. Now, as we enter the Christian worldview airspace, we'll be experiencing clear-headed thinking, and we'll soon be reaching logical conclusions. Feel free to recline your seat and enjoy the remainder of the flight. And thank you for flying TRN Airways.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity. But as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
There's still been some talk about this fellow up in this pastor, Marty Minto, I believe was his name, up in Pittsburgh. His talk show that he had been criticized for criticizing the Pope, as I've done here just recently, and was actually fired. There's a worldviewweekend.com website. Brandon W. House, or Brandon S. House, has written a little article on there called Christian Happy Talk. Some of our production staff brought this up to me this morning. He says, "I watched Pastor Marty Minto with his calm, respectful, and Christ-like attitude being interviewed on MSNBC's Scarborough County on Thursday night. He was discussing his firing by Word FM, Pittsburgh Salem's network radio station. According to the numerous press reports, Pastor Minto was fired from his talk show host for simply responding to a caller who asked him if the Pope went to heaven. When Minto shared from the scriptures that only those who are born again get into heaven, a response of outrage was expected. I was so moved by Pastor Minto's calm and respectful demeanor during the MSNBC interview that I had to track down his home phone number and call him to make sure I had heard the entire story. He shared with me that his own producer, who is a strong Catholic, was not offended by his answer to the caller. However, Pastor Minto got his pink slip from the manager of Word FM. In an Associated Press article, Word FM Chuck Gratner said, "Word FM needs to function in this city in support of the entire church, that means everybody, and not focus on denominational issues." The irony is that Word FM is another way of saying Bible FM or Word of God FM. So when his pastor talk show host invokes the Word of God when asked about the Pope getting into heaven, how would they prefer he answer? What non-denominational answer could he have given? Perhaps Pastor Minto should have spewed forth the politically correct answer that all people go to heaven if they live a good life and are sincere in their beliefs. Perhaps Salem Communications should change its name, its Word FM, to Tolerance FM, or Politically Correct FM. The firing of Pastor Minto brings to the forefront a national debate that has been swirling for some time among Christian broadcasting and public publishing circles. And no doubt somebody will be picking up Pastor Minto soon enough on a more conservative station, I would think. He's probably not going to stay out of the limelight. He'll be in the limelight like for the controversy now, but he'll be back on the airways, I predict, soon enough. What a shame that this station, the so-called Christian station, has no backbone. Of course, here in the area too, The Tyranny Response Unit has had personal experience with, again, another professing Christian station with no backbone, unwilling to stand up against the evils and follies of the day, preferring instead to please men and to make sure that the station would continue to have its revenues and so forth. The truth is not as important as pleasing men, and this is an unfortunate degradation that and degradation will ensue from this very unfortunate perspective of management, and that's what we see, unfortunately, all the time nowadays, it seems, about everywhere we turn on Christian radio. Well, we have a couple of interesting ideas that have been sent in from our production staff on the law of God. Shifting gears here a bit, Owen's definition of the law of God, this is John Owen, the great Puritan writer, says this: Owen's definition of the law of God is simple yet profound. The law is the beam of the holiness of God himself. Whatever the law of God communicates to anyone, it does so in the name and authority of God. Biblical law, therefore, is both of God and from God. The source of biblical law is not the people, and it is neither from any particular religious organization. Rather, the source of biblical law is unique because it issues from God alone. This is an important point, and I'm sure the research staff brought this up to remind us that legislation is different than law. Law comes from God. It could also come from social custom, we would say, but ultimately true law, the law of God and biblical law, must come from God alone, never from legislators or never from the ranks of men. Legislation, on the other hand, is things that men create while in session, assembled together as a legislature or in Congress. These things may concur with biblical law if they actually enact what the Bible says, or they may not. They may be completely different. So legislation and law are two different things, and that's according to Friedrich Hayek. I think he makes a great case, Nobel laureate Friedrich Hayek, in his book, Law, Legislation, and Liberty. So we'd like to point that out. Also, another piece of information is that comes from our biblical source of our production staff, our biblical scholars in the production staff. From R.J. Rushdoony, the famous theonomist, regarding ancient Israel, he said, regarding taxes in ancient Israel, the poll tax was to be the state's only means of obtaining financial support. This tax was to be a fixed amount for every male 20 years or older. The rich shall give no more than the poor, or shall give no less. Thus, this effectively put a ceiling on the amount the state could demand in taxes. The juridical principles incorporated in the poll tax are as binding today as they are in ancient Israel. A truly godly social order is required to implement and enforce the principles of the poll tax. That's in his book, Tithing and Dominion, by both Eric Edward Powell and R.J. Rushdoony, Ross House Books in 1979. Well, if it's we were talking about biblical law coming from God, and we believe that this law in Exodus 30:15 also came from God. The big question is, should governments, that is specifically the states of today, be empowered to enforce this biblical law? I don't think so. Some people do think so. They say, well, where else are you going to get the principles for how to tax people? Why not just use this flat tax hitting all adults, not on incomes and so forth? Well, while I agree that it's much better to have that sort of tax than it is to have an income tax system like we have today, or many of the other taxes we have, including death taxes or inheritance taxes and estate taxes, as well as the many sundry taxes even on consumption. We might prefer that. It might be a better tax in that it's a lower tax for people, but I don't believe that the Old Testament law of Israel in any way, shape, or form should be enforced by states. The only thing states or government should do is to protect us from predators. The Genesis 9:6 function and otherwise it still applies, and the portion of the law of Moses that would be relevant to protecting us from predators should apply, but I don't think it should go any further beyond that. Interesting, though, that we get this quote from R.J. Rushdoony as a principal supporting the flat tax. Maybe you have a comment or question about that. Maybe you'd like to debate a little bit about whether or not Christians should be in support of flat taxes. If so, please do give us a call at the show, 864-244-8177. The backup line still working. If you can't get through on the 244-8177 number, try 864-201-6955. Or send your questions by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. We'll look forward to discussing it with you some more. Well, you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we're coming up to our 8 o'clock break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis. Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. 56 degrees here in Greenville, South Carolina. Going to be a beautiful sunny day with a high of 83 degrees. So if you're getting ready to go to work, don't worry about the weather. It's going to be beautiful while you're inside doing your job, unless you happen to be blessed today and being able to work outside on this great spring day here in the upstate of South Carolina. Just a couple quick reminders that we have the Institute for the Constitution, or Institute on the Constitution, being sponsored by South Point Baptist Church in Pelzer, South Carolina. Call Pastor Tony Romo at 864-269-1443 for information or to register. That's 864-269-1443. Classes began a couple of Mondays ago. We'll continue every Monday evening for 12 weeks. In other words, another 10 weeks, starting at 6:30 p.m. till 8 p.m. Call Pastor Romo at 864-269-1443 for information or to register. You'll join your friends and neighbors for a wonderful opportunity to learn about American history, the underlying biblical principles on which our government is based, and the history of the drafting and ratification of the Constitution of the United States. Be sure to attend those meetings if you can. Before going to those meetings, we'd also encourage you to go to the policyofliberty.net website, scroll down to the section entitled Liberty Minutes, and you'll find there a 46-minute talk or reading of some articles on Christian views on rebellion, highlighting the American War for Independence. This really should be listened to before you get out there to the Institute on the Constitution in Pelzer. So if you have an opportunity this week or this weekend before you head out to that conference, please go ahead and have a listen to that series of readings out there that total 46 minutes on the Policy of Liberty.net website. Also, next Monday, in case you're interested, We have another meeting that occurs regularly on the fourth Monday of every month here in Greenville of the Americans for Constitutional Government. It meets at the Sims Library on Pelham Road in Greenville at 10 a.m. There will be speakers who share information on topics of local as well as national interest. Again, that will be occurring this coming Monday at 10 o'clock at the Sims Library. Hope you'll be able to attend and hope to see you there. Remember, too, for those of you who are interested, every Friday at California Dreaming around 12 to 3 p.m., I meet with some folks informally to discuss public policy issues, and many people who want to come by and just listen to me talk with other folks about public policy issues, just congregate around some table, enjoy a salad or a sandwich, and just have a great time of fellowship as we talk about ideals of the Founding Fathers, liberty, and the Christian response to public policy, the nature of the state, and so forth. These are interesting discussions for us, and if you would like to join us, feel free to do so. Just come on by to California Dreaming, and around 12 or a little later, there'll be people who begin showing up, and we'll have a pretty small group of 48 people be there on any given Friday. We have some great discussions, and you're more than welcome to come visit if you would like to do so. California Dreaming, Fridays in the afternoon. Well, we have an email this morning from Chuck, and he has a comment, and he says, "Hi, John. In Cato's March," this is the Cato Institute he's referring to in Washington, D.C., the libertarian think tank, "in March, April policy report, Gene Healy noted that many actions, some very trivial, have recently become federal crimes. He has an interesting article on this at Cato's website," which I have not had a chance to go and look at, by the way. Just getting this email late last night and haven't had a chance this morning. "This contradicts the common belief that federalism is irrelevant, that we should pass laws any way we can just so long as a problem is being solved. He also gives the example of a U.S. seafood dealer now serving 8-year prison terms for breaking a Honduran law requiring lobster tails to be at least 5.5 inches long. Honduras denied that their law had been broken. It's complicated, but here are some more details," and he gives me some more links to go to. He says, "Enjoying your show very much, Chuck. And P.S., welcome to Christian Exodus. Frank Janoski did a fine interview on Friday." Well, I'm sure Frank appreciates that comment, and we do welcome Christian Exodus. Well, at any rate, the whole thing that Chuck's bringing up here about trivial laws being passed and becoming federal crimes is very important. Most of these laws and rules that are not really laws, these legislations that are enacted, are there to protect certain individuals in their monopoly position in the market. For instance, I remember Walter Williams talking about in a course a number of years ago, maybe 10 years ago, that there had been price support for American orange growers by very strange, curious means. And they have to support the price of oranges, sugar, and many other things in the United States in order to prevent those jobs from being lost. That's the idea, who are in those particular industries, because it's so much cheaper to produce oranges and sugar and things of that nature in other countries, coffee, for instance. We just aren't a nation that has the geographical area that really supports orange production in a massive sense, as does, say, Brazil. In Brazil, they have a landmass that's very tropical, and the climate's very good for producing oranges, apparently, because they have always a large bumper crop. Labor costs are low. And Americans, of course, are forced through the tariff to pay much higher prices for things like orange juice. Well, one other way they protect consumers, one reason they protect producers of oranges here in America is to put size limitations on the oranges. In other words, an orange has to be a certain number of inches in diameter before it's considered acceptable, that the public is not going to be served if small oranges are put up on the shelves. And so what happens with these smaller oranges is they end up getting fed to cattle. And so down in Florida, as Walter Williams recounted, they have the least problems with scurvy among cattle, because they constantly feed these oranges, these small oranges, to cows down there because they can't bring them to market. What happens when you destroy a large supply? For those of you who know a little about economics, when you destroy a large supply of the orange crop in any given year, well, what happens is the price rises because demand is still basically the same, and you reduce the supply by feeding them to cows and declaring certain things off limits. You end up increasing the price. And so this is one way that we pay higher prices through regulation. Who benefits from the higher price, from the destruction of the crop? Well, those who are producing it, obviously. If someone were able to come in on the side and sell some more and cheat the system, he'd be able to make a handsome windfall, in a sense, off of this regulation. But by and large, the people who are in the market are trying to get a monopoly privilege out of the state, and therefore these size limitations are put on things. And so, again, this idea of the person serving an 8-year prison term for breaking a Honduran law requiring lobster tails to be at least 5.5 inches long sounds very similar to the whole orange and feeding them to cows fiasco here in America. Well, many actions that would seem trivial have become crimes, primarily, Chuck, to support these private interests, they're essentially political payoffs to producers and wealthy individuals who are in the production of different goods and services and looking for the government to protect them from competition or shield them from their competitors so that they can produce more. They're also looking for the government to force consumers to pay higher prices for their products or to regulate their competition right out of the market. So here, here we have many trivial laws. The true meaning and the true reason why we have many of these rules, not really laws, legislations, not to help the public interest, but actually ends up harming the public interest. Appreciate that you're bringing up the article, though, Chuck. It's an interesting economics point, and I'm glad you were able to do so. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be right back.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Government is not reason. It is not eloquence. Government is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. President George Washington.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS, as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals. That's npros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
The Nationalist Times is a politically incorrect monthly newspaper that has reported on the progress of the Christian Worldview program since it began. Tyranny Response Unit, Tyranny Response Network listeners can obtain a free postpaid sample copy by calling Nelson at 864-642-4315. Visit the Times website, anu.org. Mention this ad for a big discount on your subscription. The Nationalist Times picks up where the liberal media leave off and salutes Dr. Coben's pioneering broadcast work. Thank you. I would also like to mention the Times Examiner, our friends at the Times Examiner, Bob Dill and Laverl. Give them a call at 864-268-0576 and get a subscription for just $25 a year, $27 if you're out of state. Christian Exodus members, take note if you're still out of state coming in this way. It's a very low price to get a whole lot of information. Great columnists every week. Walter Williams, Thomas Sowell, Phyllis Schlafly, Pat Buchanan, Joe Sobrin, many others, Charlie Reese, as well as yours truly, the Tyranny Response Unit, Dr. John Coben, Ben Graydon, occasional columns by other local favorites such as Stephen Yates, professor of philosophy at the University of South Carolina Upstate. Give a call to Bob or Laverl, 864-268-0576, and be sure to get a subscription today. Pick up a copy at 44 Pine Knoll Drive, just off of Wade Hampton Boulevard in Greenville, or better yet, just give them a call, 864-268-0576. Well, we're talking a little bit about some economic follies that have been going on in history to protect producers and then monopolize prices and make them their profits go up via public policy. Common thing that that's done. Another common thing that's done is to try to force people to change their behavior patterns based on spurious, that is false, economic principles or the ideas of leftist philosophers. And one of those, it has to do with, and one big area, it has to deal with environmental tactics or environmentalism. So-called environmental truths are actually environmental myths that people are told to believe. The world is overpopulated. They need to cut back on the number of children they have. We're told the world is getting dirtier, and the air is dirtier, and the water is contaminated, more contaminated because of industry and the vicious attitudes of capitalists and greedy people who are seeking to make profits at the expense of others. This is it's closely tied, of course, with the Marxian ideal, but it's all false. The fact of the matter is, more people mean more wealth. The human mind is the ultimate resource. We can resolve many things with the human mind, where natural resources are what they are, limited in their scope and unable to actually produce true long-lasting wealth over the long run. But on the other side of things, there's a lot of false science that is used to promote very spurious and foolish doctrines, whether they have to do with the so-called global warming doctrine, whether they have to do with false religion and Mother Gaia being thrust upon public school children to give them a philosophy of nature that is completely against the Bible and against the premises of liberty and capitalism and free markets. And these are commonplace, and we find that government continually is adopting these sorts of stances based on false science or based on vain philosophy, and urge people basically to change their behavior for no good reason. There is no problem with population. There is not a world that's going to end anytime soon on account of human events, such as using too many products that destroy the ozone layer or something, as if God is no longer in control. This is a pagan worldview. It's not a Christian worldview to hold such things. And a Christian worldview, we do not accept that movement. And here we have Congress asked to boost ethanol production. Speaking of the environmental wacko kind of idea, Washington, corn-based ethanol is being pumped into more gas tanks every year, and farm state senators and a majority of governors want an even greater greater flow. Now, why would they want a greater flow of ethanol? Well, think about it, folks. Farm state senators get elected by farmers, and they want to gain votes. They have to pass off to them some special benefits, and those benefits come by way of people being forced to buy their products like this ethanol through legislation, and that's what they're after. They say an energy bill Republicans are now pushing through the House this week does not go far enough to replace the foreign oil with homegrown ethanol. The legislation require refiners to use 5 billion gallons of corn-based ethanol a year by 2012, about 20% more than the industry expects to produce this year. But governors from 30 states in a recent letter to President Bush and members of Congress urged lawmakers to boost the requirement. A little later in the article, it says bills were introduced in the Senate and House last week calling for refiners to use 8 billion gallons of ethanol as a gasoline additive each year. The group has vowed to push Congress to adopt the most aggressive ethanol proposal possible in every legislation. Ethanol prices have declined sharply in recent months, largely because of the rapid growth in supply and few new markets. Okay, so what happens when the supply increases rapidly, the price will fall. That's simple supply and demand, simple economic theory. By having this price cap, this production measure where government forces people to buy more ethanol, what will effectively happen? As the quantity demanded goes up, we can expect that farmers will gain more money, and that's the whole goal. Just a simple economic theory behind it. A little bit later in the article, it says they fear requiring ethanol, which is largely produced in the Midwest, will add to the fuel costs where it's not widely produced. It's nothing more than a giveaway, nothing more than a welfare program for farmers, they say. The oil industry has also vowed to vehemently oppose any requirement besides what's already there in the bill. See, you see, folks, a lot of people don't realize the political process is all about money. It's about who can get money from one person and extract something from the pie. Governments don't produce wealth, as we read yesterday in Lou Rockwell's show. They only confiscate wealth. They take it away and use it for other purposes. It goes into a pie-shaped graph, in a sense, and everybody goes after a little slice of it, if they possibly can. It's like money being up for grabs. But all it does is redistribute wealth. It does not actually create any wealth. On the contrary, entrepreneurs, you come up with new ideas to bring new goods and services to people that they want. They don't necessarily know that they want it yet, but they do. Things like the internet or laptop computers and so forth, these things create wealth. And wealth is like an increasing spiral that gets larger and larger. If you imagine drawing from a small dot on your paper circles until that spiral gets bigger and bigger, that's what wealth production looks like in the market. Government can only take a piece of that, put it into their little pie-shaped diagram, so to speak, in a static form, and fight over who's going to get what piece of the pie. And government, the political process is all about fighting over the pieces of the pie. It's not about producing wealth for a nation. It's simply about going after the biggest chunk of change you can for your own constituency. And that's what happens in these farm states. Now, they obviously can't get as much as they'd like, but since they have an equal vote along with everyone else, they make a little trade in what we call log rolling. They say, look, give me the ethanol production for my guys, and they'll vote for me. I'll give you the bridge production money you're going to need in New York City, even though I don't care about the bridges there or bridges in Los Angeles. That's just the way the political process works. It's a lot about money, folks. It's about people trading votes for cash. It's about trying to pay off the friends in one's district with benefits such as what will happen here if ethanol is required in larger quantities. You listen to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Will Rogers said, "Those who complain about the high cost of government should be glad we're not getting all the government we're paying for."
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain speaking. We want to thank you for flying TRN Airways. Now, if you'll just look out of your left side window, you can see the dense clouds of liberal lunacy commonly polluting the airwaves. On the right side, you can see clear skies full of common sense, liberty-minded conversation. Now, as we enter the Christian worldview airspace, we'll be experiencing clear-headed thinking and will soon be reaching logical conclusions. Feel free to recline your seat and enjoy the remainder of the flight. And thank you for flying TRN Airways.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity. But as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or a comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And here's some interesting piece of information. Corey Burnell, the president of Christian Exodus, sent an email with a big photo of the KKK in the North, the Ku Klux Klan in the North. He says racism was an American problem, not a Southern problem. The following picture is interesting since Yankees so adamantly tie racism to the South. I don't think you can go any further north than Maine and still be in the Union. Here's a picture to use the next time some ignoramus blames racism on the South. There are plenty more on the web. Just Google some pictures, he says. And this is a September 3rd, 1923 parade in Milo, Maine, showing looks like hundreds of people dressed with the white sheets around them with the cone head tops, marching down the street in Maine. He says, note that the flag they're carrying, the Stars and Stripes, interesting indeed. Why is it that we never hear these stories? Oh, yeah, the North won the war and therefore controls the media and textbooks. It's my understanding the largest KKK population exists in Indiana. Can anyone else verify that? God bless Corey. I can't verify that, but I would not be surprised. It's very interesting that there was such a large rally back in the 20s of the KKK in Maine. And they are carrying the Stars and Stripes. You know, they try to say the Stars and Bars or the Confederate battle flag, either of them, are indicative of the institution of slavery and its support of slavery. The fact is, this is not the case. Those flags had nothing to do with representing a social malady or institution like slavery any more than the Stars and Stripes did here in this photo from Maine. And yet we are constantly told by the liberal media that, boy, you've got to get rid of those Confederate battle flags because they have something to do with slavery or supporting slavery or showing what slavery or representing what that awful institution, that vicious institution was all about. Simply not the case. Well, we have a couple other interesting pieces come up about the 501c3. Remember, Chuck Baldwin made a comment that the 501c3 was not really that big of a deal and that he was never forced to stop preaching what he wanted to from the pulpit. Well, on LouRockwell.com, one of our researchers found an article by Norman Patterson entitled Church or 501c Tax-Exempt Corporation, and it says the following. Matthew 6:24, no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one or love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Gary North and Ron Paul have written important articles on the tax-exempt status of churches in America. What I'm about to tell you is true of approximately 87% of all the churches in the United States of America, according to Peter Kershaw, author of the excellent book In Caesar's Grip, found at www.hushmoney.org. Many Americans are unaware that most churches in America are corporations. Churches were hoodwinked into believing they must incorporate. Churches did this because they were told they would make them tax-exempt, protect them from liability, and a whole list of other reasons. Most churches forming today believe they must apply to the state to become a church. The origin of the church is found in none other than Jesus Christ himself. Ephesians 5:23 states that Christ is the head of the church. The state cannot start a church. This would be a direct violation of the separation of church and state implied in the First Amendment. However, the state can create a corporation. Churches who incorporate are entities of the state and become an artificial person. Upon the other hand, the corporation is a creature of the state, is presumed to be incorporated for the benefit of the public. It receives a certain special privilege and franchises and holds them to be subject to the laws of the state and limitations of its charter. Its powers are limited by law. It can make no contract not authorized by its charter. Its rights to act as a corporation are only preserved to it as long as it obeys the laws of its creation. Hale versus Henkel, 201 U.S. Supreme Court, page 43. Through 74, 1906. Well, this is the problem when you have the church and the state being mixed, and I think people had been hoodwinked into believing that they need to incorporate their churches. What possible good do we get from incorporation as a church? The only thing, the possible benefit you get is not a tax-exempt status, but the possibility for limiting liability if someone were to walk on the church property and fall down and be injured and want to sue the church. But, you know, these things like liability issues can be covered other ways. One is through insurance policies. That's the free market solution. The other is by putting the church into a trust situation or some other legal entity that's not a privilege of the state, and using that trust to limit the liability of members. So there are other ways that legal arrangements can be made to get the same benefits of a corporation, and yet Christians are constantly believing, obviously, that the best thing they can possibly do is to incorporate and protect themselves by becoming creatures of the state. This is a very dangerous practice. I think Chuck Baldwin was mistaken when he said it's not that big a deal. I think it is a big deal, and Christian churches need to wake up and smell the coffee on this one. They are losing liberties. They're losing their rights by virtue of the fact that they've gone over to become part and parcel with the state, gone hand in hand with the state in producing the church here in America. LouRockwell.com also has an interesting article written by Anthony Gregory, Waco, Oklahoma City, and the Post-9/11 Left-Right Dynamic. He says, 10 years ago on April 19th, 1995, the largest terrorist attack in U.S. history on American soil occurred with an explosion brought down the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City and snuffed out the lives of 168 individuals, including 19 children. After the initial shock, the political implications began to surface. Clinton implicitly blamed the attack on right-wing talk radio as purveyors of hate and division, and many left liberal pundits echoed the same line. Reactionary anti-Clintonism, opposed to gun-grabbing, social engineering, and the taxing spending of the Clinton regime, was the root cause of the Oklahoma massacre, we were told. The more libertarian and less establishment wing of the conservative movement was the culprit. Oh, yes, always. Skipping down in the article, I do not think the United States government is responsible for the fact that a bunch of religious fanatics decided to kill themselves, was the case, was the crying about the Branch Davidians. And so the U.S. government, again, tries to shift blame and put the Waco massacre on the shoulders of those there at Waco, and they wanted to burn themselves alive in these bunkers, these lies that we've been told for years. In 1997, even John Ashcroft responded to a proposed internet surveillance bill by saying the administration's interest in all email is a wholly unhealthy precedent, especially given the administration's track record on FBI files and IRS snooping. Every medium by which the people communicate can be subject to exploitation with those of the illegal intention. Nevertheless, there is no reason to hand Big Brother the keys to unlock our email diaries, open our ATM records, read our medical records, or translate our international communications. As bad as the Republicans were, they seemed much less willing than Democrats to turn a tragedy such as Oklahoma into an occasion to build a total state. But here, the Republicans have been in power, at least recently, when the 2001 tragedy occurred on 9/11. And here's what they had to say. You're neither with us, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists, uttered the Republican president. Became a new slogan for the new conservative movement. Concerned and thoughtful American libertarians, liberals, and even more conservatives pointed out that 9/11 occurred as a result of decades of inexcusable U.S. foreign policies. Many conservatives this time went along with the federal power grab, agreeing with the new 9/11 post, John Ashcroft, that those who scare peace-loving people with phantoms of lost liberty only aid terrorists where they erode national unity and diminish our resolve. They give ammunition to America's enemies and pause to America's friends. Interestingly enough, the bipartisan support for the police state responses to Oklahoma and 9/11 also blurs the issue. During Waco, although some bold leftists saw through the federal lies, there was silence among mainstream liberals who didn't want to agree with right-wing extremists that Clinton had done something so awful. Bottom line is, skipping later in the article, that for liberty to triumph, the more libertarian wings of both left and right need to see their common goals, see through the partisan smokescreens, and recognize at all times that opposition to fundamental criticism of the state do not necessarily imply hatred of America or solidarity with its most murderous enemies. Appreciate that that good article this morning on Lou Rockwell by Anthony Gregory. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in a few minutes.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis. Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview. Currently 56 or 57 degrees here in the Greenville area. Going to get up to a high of 82 today under sunny skies. Should be a beautiful spring day as you're making your way out to work. You can think about what it'd be like if you weren't working, you just had an opportunity to barbecue today and relax. But unfortunately, you have to go to work today, and so you know that the weather's not a problem. At least that's some consolation. I'm talking about President Bush now with James Bovard's article that's appeared on LouRockwell.com. We were talking earlier in the show about government manipulation of markets, the environmental rules that have been thrust upon us, the philosophy of these sages of the left that are so popular today. As well as the revisionist history that makes us think that racism and things are of that nature are aligned with the South and never occurred in the North. Well, at any rate, President Bush has been criticized by Cato affiliate James Bovard, a prolific writer and columnist. James Bovard does very well in showing up so many of the foibles and follies of the Bush administration. That's what, as he did of the Clinton administration, by the way. On November 1st, 2001, President Bush, says Bovard, issued an executive order entitled Further Implementation to the Presidential Records Act. His order effectively overturned an act of Congress and a Supreme Court decision and could make it far more difficult for Americans to learn of government abuses. In 1978, Congress passed the Presidential Records Act declaring the United States shall reserve and retain complete ownership, possession, and control of presidential records. The release of records, however, now, including those pertaining to the Iran-Contra scandal from the Reagan administration, could have proven a profound embarrassment to many of officials in George W. Bush's administration, as well as to his father, who was vice president under Reagan. The White House completely misrepresented both the 1978 law and the new executive order. A person here, Ari Fleischer, who is the White House press secretary, says, insisted that Bush's order was a triumph in open government because under the existing procedures, existing law, a former president has the right to withhold anything for any reason if they don't want to make it public, he says. Well, anyway, this kind of secrecy has been a detriment, says Bovard. The people's right to know has been replaced by a former president's right to suppress. What a shame, but this is the kind of America that we live in. He ends here with his little, I think apparently he has a book called The Bush Betrayal by James Bovard. He says in closing this article, has the people's right to know been replaced by the president's right to suppress? Congress should reject Bush's nominee for National Archivist and should pass a law raising Bush's iron curtain around presidential records. The more secrecy that government is permitted, the more lies the public will suffer. We couldn't agree more on that that point. We need to make sure that we have all the information we possibly can on government or the state because it shows us the true, not only the nature of the state, but how the state is continually depriving us of our great liberties we have here in America. Well, one other thing that one of our TRN production staff brought up, Brad had sent to me a little earlier today. He says this news is a little bit old. But it is indeed important and still relevant for today. Something else to watch out for with what government is trying to do in the back door against homeschoolers. In fact, government portrays homeschoolers as terrorists, according to WorldNet Daily. In a federally funded exercise to prepare emergency responders for a terrorist attack, a Michigan county concocted a scenario in which public school children were threatened by a fictitious radical group that believes everyone should be homeschooled. The made-up group was called Wackos Against Schools and Education. The exercise in Muskegon... I guess I'm a wacko, aren't I? Well, people would already say that at any rate, but I'm against public schools and against any kind of state education. So if they're talking about being against public schools and education, then I would be counted in that group. If you want to talk about schooling in general or the idea of being educated, then I wouldn't be. But at any rate, the exercise in Muskegon, Michigan yesterday simulated a situation in which a bomb on board a bus full of children knocks the vehicle on its side and fills the passenger compartment with smoke. Dan Stout, director of Muskegon County Emergency Services, told WorldNet Daily the choice of the fictitious group certainly was not meant to offend homeschoolers. Right. I don't think there was any particular objective other than to just have a name, he said. A WorldNet Daily reader who saw the story about the exercise in Muskegon Chronicle, however, said he was outraged at the characterization of the terrorists. Well, this is indeed an important thing to bring up again today, because anyone who is an enemy of the liberal establishment or the big business establishment or those who are in the Bush administration or even the Clinton administration needs to take note that we could well be in the sights of them to be destroyed, eliminated, repudiated as those who work against the public interest. They hate us because we hate them. We hate their works, which is that we love the people who are there because we are to love sinners. Don't misunderstand me. But we hate what they're doing to us and destroying our freedoms. We need to defend ourselves against these villains, their scandalous acts, and their viciousness towards the principles of the Founding Fathers. And don't put it past George W. Bush or any of his cronies or anyone in the legislature today to attack its greatest foe, the homeschoolers, who are going to rise up and eventually begin to dominate the world as the public school continues to put into decline and down to the abyss its people. So just thought I would bring up to your attention, appreciate the research staff finding that that older article for me to remind us how perilous times really are in this day and age. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Government is not reason. It is not eloquence. Government is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. President George Washington.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Interesting enough, Bush says his privacy must be protected. On April 15th, it was noted that Bush used to be a prolific emailer, but now he doesn't want to do that because he fears that people might find out about what he's thinking or what his personal views are on certain things. if it, his work goes over the internet. So he stopped being an emailer, pulled out of cyberspace, is very concerned about his own privacy. Yet he doesn't seem to be that concerned about other people's privacy being protected. And that's why he's so in support of the Patriot Act. He swore an oath to the Constitution to preserve, protect, and defend it. And as James N. Clymer, the chairman of the Constitution Party National Committee, has pointed out in a recent article, just as this president seems intent on harassing a law-abiding citizen, he seems equally bent on looking the other way when there's obvious corruption and criminal conduct in high places. Bush is like so many other politicians who end up making a double standard. We can't speed on the road, supposedly, but they can. We have to be forced into a lame system of Medicare and so-called Social Security, but not them. They get a private pension plan that's different, works different. As I understand it, anybody who's elected just once to Congress gets $15,000 a year for life per month to live on, even if it's only been there for one term as part of his retirement package. So these people live under totally different rules. And the president talking about privacy, once again, is thinking about his own privacy being way more important and a totally different thing than the privacy of other people. This article concludes, so this president's policy on crime may be pretty well summed up by noting who's safe from the reaches of government, who is not. Those safe are high government officials, though guilty of crimes of breach of trust of their office and illegal immigrants. Those not safe are hardworking, liberty-loving citizens who pay their taxes, those who try to maintain some privacy in their personal affairs, and anyone who dares to think a gun is for protection. Yeah, it's so true. They need to be held accountable for their actions, these scoundrels, especially George W. Bush. It's a very sad thing to see that so many Christians have got on the bandwagon following the Pied Piper and believing George W. Bush is somehow promoting the principles that Christians hold dear. In fact, he's not doing so whatsoever. Abortion is still continuing on. We still have public education. Two of our main social maladies in the world today, in our nation, are the public school, the government indoctrination center, and abortion. And Bush could stop both of these things, has chosen not to do so because he's showing his true colors. He gives lip service for certain things that Christians tend to like. But the bottom line is, when the rubber meets the road, very little of anything is done towards accomplishing those ends. That's what we have under George W. Bush these days, folks. Let's not be too surprised by it. Well, we had a couple of other articles come up from the research staff I should mention here quickly. One that I thought was sort of interesting was the two prayers that changed the course of history. This came up from Gray Echoes, I believe, and the research staff pulled it up. He said, this is several years old, but still worth reading and sharing. Two prayers that changed the course of history. Though dead, both men serve as examples of true patriotism. Both men's lives are as old as William Wallace's hand. to what most moderns do not understand. God-inspired love of native sod. God and his generals. Two prayers that changed the course of history. Robert E. Lee and Robert the Bruce. North of the Tweed and south of the Potomac, A Tale of Two Roberts, A Tale of Two Prayers That Changed the Course of History by Richard Williams, Jr. Patriotism is the love of a land and its people. Nationalism is the love of government. Isn't that a great quotation? Patriotism is the love of a land and its people, where nationalism is the love of a government, or specifically a state. Nationalist tendencies, in my view, are always dangerous tendencies because we should not be enamored with states. We can love the land and its people, but not be enamored with the state that plagues it. States are parasitic organizations that leech off of people, force people into behavior modification schemes that suit the interests of fair-haired friends or of the power brokers themselves. And they are certainly not beneficial to those who are the constituents or those who love liberty. Anyway, I want to just skip down to the bottom of this article. We don't have much time to read it, obviously, on the air here. But he says, the eminent Virginia historian Philip Alexander Bruce expressed the sentiment with these words. It was love of home, with its throng of recollections of the past, both near and far, that nerved many a Southern soldier. Love of the South was inextricably mixed up with his love for family, the family hearth. Love of one particular spot, of one neighborhood, of one state, was the foundation of stone of the love of the entire region, which entered so deeply into the spirit of the Confederate soldier. The Lees were Virginians of Virginians, How could he raise his sword against his native sod and against his own kin? Mary Lee would later write of her husband, her husband's contest with self that historic night. My husband has wept tears of blood over this terrible war. Finally, after midnight, a spiritually drained Lee solemnly descended the stairs to the sitting room where Mary had waited and said, and he said, Mary, well, the question is settled. Here is my letter of resignation, a letter I have written to General Scott. Sir, I have the honor to tender the resignation of my commission of colonel in the 1st Regiment of Cavalry. Very respectfully, your obedient servant, Robert E. Lee. In the words of Douglas Southall Freeman, it was the decision of Lee to make a travail of prayer that had rendered its fruit. Lee would cast his lot with Virginia in full measure. There was no other thing he could do. He opposed secession and had termed it a revolution. He also would state, a union can only be maintained by swords and bayonets, has no charm for me. Even after the war, as the South lay in ruin, Lee would affirm the rightness of his decision. I only did what my duty demanded. I could have taken no other course without dishonor, and if it were all to be done over again, I should act precisely in the same manner. Regular readers of his website will likely need no further explanation of the consequences of Lee's decision. His glorious victories against overwhelming odds have inspired volumes. Though the South ultimately lost, the Confederacy, Confederacy's greatest general, what about Stonewall? Anyway, greatest general is as much recognizable as any history, and in any history, and more admired than any officer of the North can claim. Lee became an unwilling Christ figure for Southerners. Greater love hath no man than a man lay down his life for his friends. John 15:13. Well, at any rate, let me read on just a quick more. We're going to go over for a little bit for our break here. Lee would cringe at such an analogy, and certainly no sacrilege was intended. Yet the comparison is undeniable, and if one believes the Bible and our command to be Christ-like, wholly appropriate, God knows we need some Christ-likeness to emulate in our day. So what of Lee, Lee's progenitor, Robert the Bruce? Bruce was so sickened by his own traitorous conduct that he rose from the table, went immediately to a nearby chapel, and fell upon the altar. There he wept bitter tears of repentance, praying for forgiveness, and vowing to God to never again raise his hand against Scotland. Robert the Bruce kept his vow, ultimately freeing Scotland from the English yoke, and became King of Scotland. Thus Bruce has achieved the dreams of William Wallace. Through their paths and their outcomes were different. Both Robert E. Lee and Robert the Bruce were revered in their homelands today. Both men, through the intervention of divine supplication, chose the path of honor and sacrifice and altered the course of history. Both died heroes, bound by ancestry and providence. Perhaps it was providence speaking and reminding humanity of these two warriors' ties to Robert E. Lee met the final enemy. As Lee lay dying in Lexington, Virginia, the stormy October sky flashed with an unusual light for several nights in a row. According to Douglas Southall Freeman, a beckoning hand at a Lexington woman took from a bookshelf a copy of The Lays of the Scottish Cavaliers and pointed with eerie assurance to the following verse. All night long the northern streamers shot across the trembling sky, fearful lights that never beckon save when kings or heroes die. Though dead, both men serve as examples of what true patriotism is. Both men's lives point, as did William Wallace, a decaying hand to the most modern, don't understand, God's inspired love of native sod. Interesting patriotic article to read here and consider on Christian Worldview. Look forward to hearing from you all. If you have comments or questions about this, by email, send your questions and comments to questions@policyofliberty.net, or by all means, give us a call at 864-244-8177. We'll be back in just a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Will Rogers said, "Those who complain about the high cost of government should be glad we're not getting all the government we're paying for."
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain speaking. We want to thank you for flying TRN Airways. Now, if you'll just look out of your left side window, you can see the dense clouds of liberal lunacy commonly polluting the airwaves. On the right side, you can see clear skies full of common sense, liberty-minded conversation. Now, as we enter the Christian worldview airspace, we'll be experiencing clear-headed thinking, and we'll soon be reaching logical conclusions. Feel free to recline your seat and enjoy the remainder of the flight. And thank you for flying TRN Airways.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity, but as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And the production staff dredged up a little piece by Robert Edward Faulkner, writing in just a believer in the old American way of doing business, and he says this: why does everyone continue to say, oh, that it is not in accordance with the Constitution? Do they not understand or know that this country does not operate under the laws of the Constitution any longer? My goodness, Lincoln the lawyer for the industries of the North and 16th President of the United States violated the Constitution many, many times while stealing our country. This man committed a coup of unprecedented perpetuation while beginning to change this country into the hands of industries and the Federal Reserve to be controlled by the money men of the world. In order to do this, he had to control the South because the Southern politicians operated under the laws of the Constitution, and the Northern, under the laws of the Constitution, the Northern conspirators said that the words of that document was a contract with hell. Therefore, the South had to be controlled. Therefore, he turned his army, his Union army, loose on the once peace-loving people of the South to destroy this country. And the historians say it was all about slavery. Censored. These barbarians came into our lands, burned, looted, raped both black and white Southerners, and committed all sorts of war crimes that would make other world dictators look like saints. And even today, they continue this war with organizations like SPLC, Civil Liberties Union, NAACP, among others. They must bring us to our knees by destroying all remnants of the old South, which is where their most powerful advocate of a strong country held together by the laws of the Constitution, and they are using the slavery issue to do, and it is working very effectively. On top of these things, these people wish to send God through the showers and rid the country of Christianity, and what most Southerners or Yankees are going to do about it? Well, I appreciate his comments there, and the North did have to control the South. If they didn't, they would never have been able to do what they've done. And it is true that we've seen the degradation and denigration of Christian principles in the South and elsewhere, for that matter, as a result of what they've done. One other announcement as we're getting close to the close of our show today. The Libertarian Party is asking for your help. As many of you know, they say the Libertarian Party is involved with a coalition striving to end the confiscatory death tax. The death tax has long been recognized as a significant threat to family-owned businesses and farms as an unjust tax that affects all families by taking up to 50% of an individual's savings that should be passed down to his or her family. The U.S. House of Representatives yesterday approved legislation, House Resolution 8, that would completely eliminate the death tax beginning in 2001. This bill is now on its way to the U.S. Senate. Democrat and Republican leaders in the Senate hope to reach a compromise that will help H.R. 8 get through the Senate this summer, but this compromise could jeopardize the value of the bill, undermining its purpose. We support the passage of the bill in its unaltered form, and we don't think it's necessary to compromise the language anymore to get it approved. Make no mistake, the closest we have to ending this un-American government tax is to, in order to ensure its final demise, your support is urgently required. This is not only an opportunity to end the death tax, it is our chance to display the strength of the Libertarian Party. We will be heard. To help eliminate the death tax, each Libertarian Party member needs to call or write his U.S. Senator and ask that H.R. 8 be approved without compromise. Please call, write, and email your senators about this issue and tell them to pass H.R. 8 in its unaltered form. So not just Libertarians, all of us should be opposed to taxation in general, but specifically in this case, the death tax. And we have an opportunity to limit taxes we should go ahead and do that by asking Congress to pass H.R. 8 in its unaltered form. Appreciate the party bringing that point up for us to and bring live here on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Had a good time being with you all today, and we look forward to seeing you again tomorrow morning on for another edition of Christian Worldview. Until then, God bless you.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.